these things, and we'll get to that again in the application. But the performing of miracles by Jesus, as well as the apostles after they began preaching in the book of Acts, was to confirm the word, confirm that they were who they said they were, and that as this, the aim of this lesson is to recognize Jesus as the Son of God through the miracles of healing that he performed. Of course, the other miracles of turning the loaves into, multiplying the loaves and the fishes would do the same thing. Okay, we looked at the leper. The thoughts for questions, we're going, or rather the questions for review, sorry. We'll look through them very quickly. Most of them are easy. If there's something we need to discuss about any of them, we'll do that. Why did some of the scribes regard Jesus' words to the paralytic as blasphemous? He made himself God. How did he? What did he do or say that they thought that? He said, forgive sin. The paralytic, Jesus said, your sins are forgiven. And he healed him by those words, by his action, by his... And so they said, well, you're making yourself equal to God. Why did they say that? How did he make himself equal to God just by telling a guy your sins are forgiven? Were they right about that? That only God could forgive sin? So they were right about God. Only God could forgive sin, but they didn't recognize him as God. They were rather upset about that. Go ahead, Gail. Okay. Jesus was a mere man, isn't there, in their viewpoint. When Jesus told the paralytic to take up his bed and walk, what did that imply? That he was healed. Jesus didn't say, I healed you, get up and walk, did he? But he just said, take your bed up and walk. So when he did, he did. When he took up his bed, I mean, he walked. Okay. Anything else on 1 and 2? 2 and 3, or 3 and 4 rather, when asked whether it was lawful to heal on the Sabbath, how did Jesus answer? This has to do with the healing on the Sabbath at the top there. Jesus heals the paralytic, Jesus heals on the Sabbath. We're at that section. Okay. Ted? That's what he said. That's all, okay. Did he answer their question and say, it's all right to heal on the Sabbath? Okay. He did answer, but you're right. Your answer is correct. He didn't say it's all right to heal on the Sabbath. He posed a question to them. And when he posed that question and they knew what the answer was, he had them, so to speak. Okay, Ted. Jesus said that one time. Was that the occasion here? I mean, did he say that in this particular instance? No, he didn't. But he did say that on one occasion, that the Sabbath was, man was made for the Sabbath. Sabbath for man, is that right? Is that the right quote? Okay. And by the way, I probably said this before, and you maybe heard lessons about it that are mentioned in it, that Jesus many times would answer people's question with a question. He was a master teacher, in fact, if you want to hear him sometime, I'll have my lessons. I've had a whole series of lessons on Jesus, the master teacher. Don't think I've ever taught them here or in Washington. But anyway, Jesus knew exactly how to answer a person. Sometimes I recognize he knew what was in a person's mind, which we don't have the ability to do. Can you read my mind right now? You know exactly what I'm thinking? You can't, and I can't read yours. unless I tell you, you don't know what's on my mind. But anyway, Jesus had that ability. But that aside, we can still learn from Jesus as how he approached people and in his approach to the people and answering their questions. Was many times it's very effective to ask them a question, and that's what he did here, only he posed it in a statement that more or less that is the sheep in the ditch? Are you going to get it out? They knew the answer to that. Okay, where are we? Number four, to what degree was the man's withered hand restored? It's completely old. Was it gradual? Immediate. Was it his right hand or his left hand? It may not matter, but did it say? Which one of the writers do you think would mention which hand it was? Luke. Luke mentions that it was his right hand, and you answered that as I expected. The physician came out in Luke, and you can see that many times in his writings in the, quote, Gospel of Luke as well as in Acts. He would have noticed what hand it was. Did it really matter? Could Jesus heal either one of them? Sure, but anyway. After Jesus healed this man, what did the Pharisees plan to do? Conspired? Okay, I started to say inspired, but they conspired to kill him, to get rid of him, to destroy him. Why did we want to do that? He was a threat to them. That's a good short answer. Number six, what request did the centurion make of Jesus that displayed his faith in God, in him as God's son? This is the healing of the centurion's servant. He came to Jesus, said his servant, just say the word. Jesus was over here. His servant was over there. They were not in the same room or in the same area. And so the centurion came to Jesus and said his servant was sick. And he, what does that indicate about, let's see, is that the next question? Yeah, I'm answering it. What does that indicate about the centurion's faith? What did Jesus say about this man's faith is number seven. He hadn't found this centurion an Israelite, a Jew? He wasn't. What's a centurion? He's a Roman soldier. We hear about one later on in the book of Acts in about the 10th chapter. So, Jesus, what caused Jesus to say, and you already know the answer, and we've kind of already mentioned, what caused Jesus to say that I've not found so great faith in Israel as this man? Okay, how is it that, okay, let me see if I can. Okay, so Kelly brings up the fact that the centurion was a man of authority. And he says, I can say to this one, you do that, and he does it, and I say to that one, and he does it. You just say the word, and my servant will be healed. You're one. He had faith in Jesus enough that Jesus didn't have to be there in the presence of the servant. Just say the word. Does that take faith? Yes, Kelly. Okay, that's a good point too. Men of faith many times, and I say many, maybe every time, I don't know how to phrase this. If you have the faith that this centurion did, you're going to have humility. But he was also a man of authority himself. He recognized Jesus could do what he could do without going and seeing his servant. And so he's a rather outstanding example of faith. Okay? Number eight, how soon was the deaf-mute healed? At the top of our list up there, it's the deaf and dumb man. he used a better word in our society today, deaf mute, in number 8. How soon was he healed? Immediately. What kind of illnesses was Jesus healing? In this passage, it talks about the deaf mute. It talks about a lot of healing, a lot of healing, doesn't it? All manner. Is anybody at that verse there? Mark 7 or Matthew 15? I'd have to look at it. I'm not sure which. I'm where it says all manner of illness, all manner of. Is that the one I'm thinking of? What kind of illnesses was Jesus healing? I may have another. Matthew 15:30, Carm. It says, go ahead. Okay, so it talks about several people that were healed by Jesus. Number 10, what instructions did Jesus give the man who was born blind? And this is the occasion, this is the account in John the 9th chapter, the only place this is found. Well, why would he want to do that? Was he dirty? Washing the pool of Siloam. The blind man has some clay on his eyes. Why in the world do you have that? Jesus made some mud out of the dust on the ground there and put it on the guy's eyes. Go wash in the pool of Siloam. How soon was the deaf mute? I'm sorry. What instructions did Jesus, this 10, give the man who was born blind? Go wash in the pool of Siloam. Number 11, when was this man's eyes opened? When he did what he was told. Same answer, both there. For what purpose did Jesus come into this world? Now, that's getting to another point. Before we go to, that's John 9:39, if you want to turn there. Back to the man washing in the pool of Siloam. Anybody know where the pool of Siloam was? Or remember? It's in Jerusalem, that's right. Where in Jerusalem? There's several. Okay. If you have a map, fine. If not, we won't take time to look it up. But if you have a map of the city of Jerusalem, the Temple Mount is up here. Just below the temple is the Ophel, if I pronounce that right. And then the city of David. And there's kind of like a foot. It'll be a footprint with the toes up here next to the temple, and then it narrows down to the heel. Down there in that area where the heel would be was a pool of Siloam. It was not a spring-fed, well, I should clarify that, but it was a very large pool. Do you know or remember where the water came from? How did he get filled with water? Why is it a pool? Hezekiah built a tunnel at the spring of Gihon, which is, if you're looking at the Temple Mount, and the temple is up here, and over here, just below the Temple Mount, is a spring. It's called Gihon. Hezekiah built a tunnel from this spring all the way down. It's not a long way, but I've forgotten how many yards it is, down to the pool of Siloam that brought water inside. The pool of Gihon is outside the walls there. And he brings it underneath the walls and down to the pool of Siloam. That's the most famous, I guess, aqueduct, underground. What's another word besides an aqueduct? To bring water to the pool of Siloam. Conduit, there you go. There may be two other times that water was taken from the pool down to the, taken from the spring down to the pool. Ward? Ward's memory is pretty good there.
Yeah.
Yep. So what Ward is saying is that the spring is up here, and the men that Hezekiah had to dig that tunnel started at the spring, and other men started where the pool is, and they started digging, and they met each other. And they didn't have lasers. You can see the marks of the axes as they chipped out the rock. And as they come from this direction, that it goes this way, and as it comes this way, it goes the other way. To me, that just blows my mind, how they were able to do that back then. Somebody was pretty smart. And that was during the time of Hezekiah, king of Judah, before they were taken into captivity. The first carrying away of Babylon was 836. Is that right? 636. Let me get my mind here. 720 for the northern kingdom. 786 for the first time they were taken away. 586. That's where I'm getting the 86. 586 was the third time. Anyway, so what I'm saying is Hezekiah was before that several years, before the taking away of the southern kingdom. 600 years, round figures, before Christ, these guys did this. And you talk about, it wasn't a miracle as far as I understand, but you talk about something that is amazing that people were able to do back then. That resulted in the Pool of Siloam having water. Now, what purpose did Jesus come into the world? John 9, verse 39. Does somebody have that? Go ahead, Mo, have you got it? For judgment, is that how it says it? I came into the world? We got a contradiction, right? Oh, in another place, Jesus said, I came not to judge. Okay. Quickly, what's the answer to that? He didn't contradict himself. I came not to condemn the world, but he did judge the world by his words. Is that a sufficient answer? Sometime we'll talk more about that. It's not our subject today, other than to answer this question. yes, it is.
Another beautiful thing about the blind man is the faith that somebody brought up trust and revealed himself in obedience. The fact is, that's a silly thing to do from a human standpoint, to have a guy to make money.
Brian, harking back to some of his lessons a few weeks ago, faith does the, I never can quote it, faith does the unreasonable. When faith demands the unreasonable, this fella trusted in Jesus when Jesus told him to go. How do I know? He went and went. That's what faith is. Yeah. What judgment are you talking about? Everybody what? I don't think he was talking about that here. If you do, I'm not going to argue with you, but I don't think so. He came into the world to present the word, and his word judges the people. because they didn't hear it by faith. So that judgment I think Jesus is talking about is from the time he began to speak to on. So, maybe so, but I don't think that's the judgment he was talking about here, because he judged the people the minute he spoke and they didn't hear, or the minute he spoke and they heard. Blind man was not judged by the words of Jesus. The Pharisees were, in the sense that they were condemned in not believing in Jesus. That's, yeah, look at the context there. You had your hand up, Laurie? He's talking about the faith of those people, the mindset of those people that he was talking about there. It's same with us. Those people who had a heart not to hear Jesus' words, not to see Jesus' words, as it were, are not going to see. And those who had the heart to see or to hear are going to. And Jeremiah said that. Jeremiah 31, about verse 31. Yeah, and Isaiah. Ward? Good. Kelly? To use Kelly's modern day illustration today, people that say that, you know, anybody can marry, and it doesn't matter whether male and female or both females and both males and so forth, the scriptures already judge them, because the scripture does not teach that. Go ahead. Yes. Right. Excuse me. Just a minute, maybe. I don't remember all the illustrations you used in those lessons right now about faith. One of them. It was unreasonable to think that the walls would fall down by marching around it. And they had marched around. If this man hadn't gone and washed, and I think that's a question down here somewhere, if a man hadn't gone and washed the pool of Siloam, he could have said, well, I just believe. But he didn't go and wash. But he'd come. Maybe I'll go ahead. Sing. Yep, same thing with Naaman. Yeah. Second Kings, the fifth chapter, maybe that's Second Kings, right. Second Kings, the fifth chapter, maybe that's talking about this Naaman the Syrian. Finally got the word from his servant girl that this guy down in Israel could heal him. And he goes down to the prophet. The prophet says, go, what? Dip seven times in the Jordan River. He went away in a huff. Who do you think I am? They're going to go and do something like that. Well, I don't know if he said it. Did he say it was muddy? Yeah, all right, he did. And it is down there where he, if it was down in the southern part of it. And his servant, as Maybeth pointed out, believed. He said, if he had told you to do some great thing, would you have done it? He did, and he came free of leprosy. Lord? Okay. Anything else before we go? Good points, all of you. For what purpose did, okay. 13, when did the leper's faith make him whole? This is the one the lepers were cleansed in Luke 17. Remember the story? The account? As they were what? As he's going to the priest? Okay, and this is the 10 lepers? 10 lepers were healed of their leprosy. But it says, when the lepers got, what did Jesus tell them? Go and see the priest. Because they're in the old hall, they were to go to the priest to offer offering in order to make it known that they were clean from their leprosy. A person who had leprosy was unclean in the law of Moses. And you understand how that's used, that term is used. I'll not go through that. But anyway, so Jesus said, go and see the priest. So on the way to see the priest, their leprosy was cleansed. And there were 10 of them, and all of them came back and thanked Jesus. Only one did. And he was a Samaritan. Lysander? Did the priest heal him or did Jesus? The priest didn't heal any of these guys. They did what they were on their way to do what they were supposed to do by Jesus. On their way, they were healed. The priest didn't have power to heal them, if I understand your question, Lysander. That was involved in it. I don't remember the exact wording now, but they would offer some sort of offering that the priest would offer for them. And so they'd have to go to the priest to do that. And as you're right, they would show themselves to the priest so that he could say, these men are clean of leprosy. They can now enter back into the fold, as it were. And everybody then would not shun them because that's what they were supposed to do. Ward? Yes. Okay. Gail. Yes. Hodgson, I don't know about the terminology, but there are lepers, and there's a leper colony, and has been for years in Hawaii, where the lepers are separated. It's a very terrible disease where you, I don't know how to describe it other than that your bones or your fingers start falling off. MRSA? I don't know. Where's our nurse? Do you know? Yeah, I guess you'd call it a skin disease. It's an awful disease. person goes through it. And yeah, right. Hanson? Okay, that's what it is. Yeah, you don't hear it called leprosy anymore. And I've never, unless I saw one in Jerusalem, I've never seen a leper. But it's a terrible disease. And they start bandaging up their fingers, and they can't eventually fall off, and their ears. And, all right, why did Jesus think it was an unusual thing that the Samaritan to return? We kind of talked about this in John, the fourth chapter, and we all know the answer. Right? Don't we know? Let me ask that. Did Jesus think an unusual thing that the Samaritan should return? And okay, so they're not usually thought of as, what's the word I'm looking for? Favorably. Yeah, pardon me, Brian? Yeah. So one of these guys was the Samaritan, one of the ten. And he was the only one who came back and thanked Jesus. Number 15, in each case, as in that of Bartimaeus, who did the witnesses ascribe the power Jesus had to heal? I looked at this case of Bartimaeus and I didn't see that. Did I miss it? Whether it's there or not, what about the answer to the question? In each of the cases whom Jesus healed and the witnesses said something, who did they ascribe the power? Maybe they ascribed it to God. Was that the right conclusion? According to the aim of our lesson, that's what it is. Okay, quickly before our time goes, question for thought. In the case of the man born blind, would he have been healed had he refused to wash his eyes in the pool of Siloam? We've already talked about that. What? And the answer was yes. Did anybody say no? Pardon me? Oh, you said no? If he hadn't washed in... Pardon me? Okay, so you didn't say no, really. What part did the faith of the one healed play in the healing? Depends on the account. Depends on the situation. Some of them, they were just healed like that. Don't know whether they had any faith or not. But then others were told to do something, and that demonstrated that they had faith. Whose faith was it that healed the paralytic in Capernaum? Right? Okay. All right. That was where Jesus was surrounded by so many people, they had to cut a hole in the roof and they let the guy down. Who are they of the east and west who will sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? What has that got to do with miracles? But those who are of faith, east and west, will sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Figuratively, all times, yes. All right, and now number 5 is answered by the thought question, or the lesson for application, I should say. Number 5, why did Jesus perform miracles of healing? Lesson for application, by healing Jesus showed himself to be a prophet of God, number 1. Number 2, a forgiver of sins. Number 3, a judge of unbelievers, and therefore the Son of God. Right? Isn't the answer number 5 right down at the bottom? So that's the... I mentioned that earlier, and Kelly mentioned last week. And it did show compassion on the part of Jesus that's not mentioned there in that lesson for application. Jesus was compassionate. But that wasn't the only reason. His compassion wasn't the only reason that he healed people. Would that be a correct statement? But it was certainly a part of it. Okay, anything on lesson number 8? Number 9. Some of you have got a copy of it. Here's the rest of it for all of you. Number 9, the power over nature. Should we explain or ask or discuss what is nature? I don't know any other term right now. Can you give one higher over nature? What do you think nature means? Higher over nature. Jesus had some works and miracles that had to do with nature. Yes. Okay. It's what God did at the very beginning. It's the natural things that started from God's miracle at the beginning. The rain falls. The sun shines. Okay. So that's what it's about. A lot of people will use the term nature as if there, you know, there's nothing miraculous ever. It's just a Big Bang theory. And that's nature. But that's not what we're talking about here. So, appreciate your comments, your questions, and your answers. And we'll look at lesson number 9 next week.